Okay, so I have 6 o'clock, and I know we have a lot of great stuff to cover tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone. I'm really excited about tonight. We've had previous webinars on growing food and places, different places in the county, and different ways you can purchase fresh food here in Cochise County. And so tonight is the night where we've got the vegetables in our hands and we're ready to cook. And I am all about food, so I am really excited about this. When I moved here about 12 years ago from a pretty big urban area. And I've always loved food, and I'm a person that when people eat with me, they say, "Well, you eat a lot for such a little thing," and I never know quite how to take that, but I do love food. And when I came here, I intentionally moved to a very rural part of the edge of the county. I live about 45 minutes from a grocery store and a long way from a restaurant, so I almost never eat out here. But I came from a very different urban environment where I had constant access to all kinds of really healthy, fresh, vegetable-based food. And so when I came here, I had my work cut out for me to get serious about my cooking, and ultimately that's what led me to gardening. So and even working on this project. So I am excited to get started on this. Just a couple short housekeeping details. This is a Zoom webinar format, so your video and audio are automatically turned off, so you don't need to worry about that. Please feel free to interact through chat, and you can ask questions either through chat, or if you have specific questions for presenters, you can do that in Q&A. But we have a nice small group, so feel free to chat and also add your own thoughts or recipes or favorite ways to cook things as we go, and we'll have some time for that. With us, oh, before I say that, this is a project of the Cochise County Library District. It's the Eat Local project. And in addition to this series of webinars, we also have our second big read is coming up in June, the book Animal Vegetable Miracle by Barbara Kingsolver. We have a website and directories of producers around the county for local food, and also markets and places you can buy local food, and just a lot of other things going on. So check out our website if you haven't. With us tonight, I'm Karen Fassenpower. I'm the project manager of Eat Local. Charlene is also with us, and she'll be helping in the background, field questions, and if anybody needs any help with anything, she's there for that. And then also from the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension, we have Elizabeth Tyndall and also Cynthia Aspengren, and we're so happy to have them with us tonight. And so with that, we're going to get started, and Cynthia is going to lead us off talking about greens.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for being here with us. Greens. Now, I was asked earlier what my favorite veggie is, and I said bell pepper, but greens are right up there because we can do so much with greens. Mostly we think about greens in a salad, and that's a great way to get greens. But some of these greens are really good in soups, in stir fries, in casseroles. So if you're trying to cut back maybe on some carbohydrates, consider using Swiss chard in place of lasagna noodles in that lasagna that you're making. Think about adding bok choy in with your stir fries. Bok choy is an excellent source of calcium. It's one of the best plant-based sources of calcium out there. It's also great for folate. Don't throw away the tops of those vegetables that you grow in your garden. All of those turnip beet greens, the beet greens, the carrot greens are all edible and really good for you. Beet greens, love beet greens. They're a little bit spicy. It's kind of like having a little bit of black pepper added to the food. They're hearty. They hold up in soups. They hold up in stews. They hold up in casseroles. So you can use them in a lot of different ways. Some of these heavier greens, like the mustard greens, beet greens, kale, Swiss chard, you can put in foods that you freeze. Some of those lighter greens, maybe like spinach, doesn't necessarily freeze as well in those foods, but these heavier greens do. And you're not going to lose a lot of flavor or color or texture when you do freeze them. So if you make a big pot of something or a big casserole with these greens in there, you've got all this flavor and texture still available after you've frozen it. And all of the greens are what we call free foods for people who might have type 2 diabetes or are concerned about type 2 diabetes in their family. So you can pretty much eat these greens all day long, and they're not going to raise your blood sugar dramatically. So you can feel really full and really satisfied with this food you're eating and get all this nutrient content and not worry about your blood sugar.
So before we go on, I want to just throw it out and see what, if anybody wants to jump in with favorite ways to prepare greens. And I'll just say, I really like to just especially the darker greens, I like to just saute them. And everything I cook, I start with olive oil, garlic, and a little bit of onions. And that's sort of how I make greens. And then I like to finish them with some kind of acid. So either a splash of vinegar or a splash of wine or even some citrus juice. And I just, I am just reading Jose Andres's book, which is in our library system, Vegetables Unleashed. And he has a great recipe for Catalan, which is area in Spain, greens. And it's basically a fast saute, but then he adds in some kind of dried fruit, like it could be dried apricots or raisins, and then nuts. And I made it the other day with kale and dried apricots and just chopped up almonds, and it was really good. And one of his veggie tips is those little add-on things, like just to think about throwing in a little bit of dried nuts or something, that really adds to it. Anybody else want to jump in on a favorite way?
I love that, Karen. I put dates in my greens.
So. Nice.
And adding that acid, whether it's the wine or the vinegar or the citrus juice, enhances flavor just the same way salt enhances flavor. So you're not adding salt, but you're getting much more of the flavor out of those foods. And heating them up will also break down all those flavor oils to really give you a wonderful hit of flavor.
What about kale salad? What's the trick to making that more edible?
Kale. There's a couple ways you can do that. You can actually massage it. Get olive oil or whatever your favorite oil is on your fingers and massage it, or you can let it sit for a few hours in that oil, and that oil breaks down the extra fibrous pieces of the kale so that it's still got that crunch, but it's not that stretchy kind of you can't chew it up crunch. And the kale salad that I put in the comments does exactly that. Nice. That oil and vinegar dressing with a little honey breaks down that fibrous stuff on the kale, so it makes it really edible and delicious and tasty. I hated kale until I had that salad in a class I taught, and now I can't get enough of it.
Cool. And Cynthia reminds me that when I was rushing through the housekeeping, I didn't mention that we have put together a whole list of resources that are primarily recipes, but also some cooking videos and just some quick tips for each of these vegetables. And that is at eatlocalcochise.org/delicious. And Charlene will pop that in the chat. But the recipe that Cynthia just mentioned for the kale salad and then also the Catalan greens and several other things are on that page. So we'll hit those for each one of these. Any other thoughts about greens before we move on?
Lindsay, don't forget you can stuff greens as well. So stuff and steam them. So especially like cabbages, I think of collards, that's one of the things I have growing in my garden right now. And you get those nice big thick leaves and they're perfect to stuff. You could either, as like a wrap, but just stuff with grains and some dried fruit and greens go really well together, and then steam those off. I love that too.
Nice. Or even I'm just thinking making it as a wrap with it raw would be a nice way to do a wrap. I hadn't thought about that.
That's what we had for dinner last night.
Nice. Excellent. Okay, we're going to talk about microgreens next. And so microgreens, if you're not familiar with them, are similar to sprouts. They're the very baby form of a plant. But the difference between microgreens and sprouts is microgreens are grown in dirt. And so I really like that for growing them at home. I grow them in a windowsill, particularly when it gets hot. Because if you've grown sprouts here, you have to wash sprouts a couple times a day anywhere, which is some extra work. But also when it gets hot here, they tend to go off fast. So you don't really have that issue with microgreens because they're in dirt and they hold the moisture better. So, and there are also, microgreens are very accessible because you can grow them yourself. And our county library branches have kits you can check out with microgreen seeds if you're interested in trying it and you haven't. But we also have several vendors in the county now that are selling microgreens. And so they're pretty easy to get at places like the Sierra Food Co-op, or both the farmers markets have a couple now microgreen vendors. So microgreens are generally eaten raw, and they're said to have, it depends on the exact kind, but they're said to have about 20 times the nutrient value of full grown vegetables. They're usually eaten raw, often used as a garnish. Things like, you can see the picture at the bottom here on top of a salad. You can put them on a sandwich. You can put them on pizza. You can put them on soup. Put them on eggs. A lot of people juice them or add them into a smoothie, and it's just a way to add more nutrients to your smoothie. And there are some microgreens that are sturdy enough that you can cook them. And a particular one is pea shoots. So when you grow microgreens of pea shoots, they grow taller, like maybe 5 or 6 inches is when I would normally cut them. And they have enough sort of heft that you can put them in a stir fry. And I understand they're very high in protein. So, and then just the last thing I'll say about microgreens is a new one that I've started growing that I really like is this one in the bottom right-hand corner, and it's cilantro. And it really has a great cilantro taste. And any way you use regular cilantro, you can use the microgreens as well. So anything else on microgreens before we go to the next one? So there's a question in the chat. Does cooking microgreens reduce their nutritional value? Cynthia, you might be the best person to answer that. I don't know that for sure.
Anytime we cook food that has vitamin C, we're reducing the vitamin C because it's a water-soluble vitamin. Most of the rest are not going to be bothered by the cooking. So cook those microgreens, but then have raw bell pepper with it to get your vitamin C in one fell swoop.
Perfect. Any other ways people love to use microgreens that they want to share? Okay, let's talk about summer squash. Elizabeth?
All right. Hi, everybody. So summer squash is definitely a favorite. It is, when it is in season, it is around. There's always the jokes about neighbors leaving zucchini on other neighbors' doorsteps. So it is extremely versatile. You can use it in just about anything. I mean, we've got, you know, zucchini bread. And you can oven fry it, cook it in casserole, stuff it or stew it. And then there's a ton of different kinds as well. So some of my favorite things, I love zucchini bread. And if you are making zucchini bread, there's a ton of recipes out there. But one of the things that you could kind of like mix things up is kind of make like a zucchini bread French toast. Especially if you're serving children, it might be kind of an interesting way to get some veggies in there. Some of my favorite recipes are like zucchini chips. So anything like oven fried, dip them in egg, and then give them the batter, whether you're using breadcrumbs or flour or Parmesan cheese or any other type of things, and then oven baking them. It's a quick and easy way to get nice crispy zucchini. And of course, zoodles have had quite the popularity, but they are really good. And that's another thing that kids will eat because you can top that with a familiar sauce. So zoodles are fun. I like zoodles. And then probably one of my go-to weeknight meals during the summer is stuffed zucchini. So taking a zucchini or a summer squash, like a boat, cutting out the middle, and then chopping that up and mixing it with whatever flavor profiles you're looking for. So if you're wanting something kind of Southwest, some black beans and tomatoes, if you want something more like Mediterranean, some chickpeas and oregano, really a lot of options. And then just baking it, if you wanted to, you could add, you know, some sausage or something to that as well. And it's just a really easy weeknight meal. It's one of my favorites. Yes, squash blossoms. It's one of life's great pleasures, the stuffed squash blossoms, absolutely. And then of course, yeah, and you can just grill them. And that is, zucchini is like extremely versatile for all of those things. But anyone else have any favorites?
I like, one of my sort of go-to things is soft tacos with veggie inside. So I often have a summer squash around. So just either grilling or pan frying that with onions, and then just using that in a soft taco instead of the chicken or the meat, and then do all the regular sort of taco stuffings.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And like Cynthia was saying earlier, using zucchini or squash in the place of a meat is like kind of the same with greens. It's something you can really easily do. I do a zucchini lasagna, and it's extremely popular in my house. And we just, you know, cut the zucchini thin and put it in there and cook it up, and it's super good.
Do you do the zucchini instead of the noodles or as a filling? Because I've seen it both ways.
So what I do is I put one layer of zucchini noodles on the bottom, and then as I layer it, I use the zucchini instead of noodles, and then I put one layer of noodles on top. Uh-huh. So I call it my kid friendly, because of course my focus is feeding kids. So it's my kid friendly lasagna. So there's noodles, but then there's also the lasagna thing.
Right.
I had never heard of a patty pan in my life till I moved to Arizona. Oh. And just steaming them and putting a little butter on it, and I'm good to go.
Those are fantastic grilled too, because they have they're a little firmer. They really do well on the grill.
It's funny, I had never eaten patty pans until I moved here as well. I've seen them, but I'd never eaten one. And I love their texture.
Yeah. Great. Okay. The next thing we're going to talk about is eggplant. And I just love eggplant. Eggplant's one of my favorite vegetables. And I think the sort of go-to thing that everybody knows is eggplant parmesan. And it's, if you haven't made that, it's fairly easy to make. You can take the eggplant slice it up, and you don't have to peel it. A lot of people peel eggplant, and a lot of recipes will call for salting it and letting it rest to pull the bitterness out. I don't feel like that's really necessary. And I would definitely say I'm an experimental cook. So I try a lot of things. I very often don't follow recipes, or I try something and see how it works out. And for me, you can see these are all, I think every single one of these pictures, the eggplant has the skin on it, except for the final step of the dip at the bottom. So I like the skin. I think, you know, it adds fiber, and people often say you lose vitamins when you skin a lot of things too. But don't feel like you have to skin it or do the salting thing. So eggplant parmesan, or the same way you cook that. So just slice the eggplant, dip it in a milk or egg wash, and then either breadcrumbs or flour, and then fry it. then you just layer it like you would a lasagna with tomato sauce and cheese for eggplant parmesan. But also those eggplant slices, once they're fried or grilled, are great for sandwiches. And when we get a lot of eggplant, and last year was just a huge eggplant year for us, we either fry those slices or grill them and freeze tons of them. And then we have them all year round just to throw on a sandwich or make an appetizer. Grilled or broiled, so brush them, again, just slice them, leave the skin on, brush them with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and either throw them on the grill or put them under the broiler. This picture on the top left-hand corner, those were done under a broiler. And then from there, you could make them into, this is a dish that has a yogurt, just a plain yogurt on top of those broiled eggplant slices. The pomegranate seed things, which I always forget the name of them, but they have a name, but the little pomegranate seeds, and then a balsamic reduction, which is a pretty easy thing to make, but it seems kind of fancy and it's really delicious. This bottom corner, that is a similar thing. These were grilled instead of broiled, but they're stuffed with goat cheese. And then again, with the balsamic reduction on top of them. And both of those you could eat hot or cold. So it's something I like to make if I'm having people over or I'm taking something potluck, because it's really good room temperature. So it's not something that has to be hot right then. Pan-fried eggplant. My favorite thing is a hoisin eggplant, and that's what's up here in the upper right-hand corner. So that's eggplant cut into strips, again, with the skins left on. And then it is, after it's cooked, you cook it a while, I'd say 20 or 30 minutes till it gets nice and soft. And then you put a hoisin sauce, and Charlene, there's a link for that recipe if you could pop it into the chat. The hoisin sauce is soy sauce, hoisin sauce, garlic, a little bit of red chili flakes, and I think a little bit of rice vinegar. But again, you can be pretty flexible with that recipe. And then you just cook that in, and it makes a really nice sort of sweet, sticky, delicious Asian eggplant dish. Eggplant is good in a slow cooker, and my husband is not a big cook, but the thing he makes that's fabulous is pasta alla norma. And it's just a diced up eggplant cooked with tomatoes in the slow cooker for a long time. And it gets to be a thick, it almost seems like a meaty tomato sauce. And so you could either put it on pasta, or you could use it anywhere you use a meat tomato sauce, like in lasagna or in different things. And that's a really nice way to use a slow cooker for eggplant. And then the last eggplant that I want to talk about is just baking them. And this picture in the middle on the right-hand side is where the eggplant has been cut in half, just whole. So the stem end is cut off, and then just cut it long ways in half. And this is for the bigger eggplant. So there are the bigger eggplants, and then there are the thinner Asian ones. The thinner Asian ones you can use with like the hoisin or anything where the eggplant gets chopped up. But this is for the bigger meatier eggplants. And then you just brush the cut side of it with olive oil, and again, salt and pepper, and then roast it. So in an oven, fairly hot, I don't know what the recipe says, but maybe 425 is what I would usually do, until it gets brown and it gets soft. So you want to do it so when you stick a fork in it, you can feel that it's really soft. So you bake it. And then when it's done roasting, you take a spoon and just spoon out all the insides of that eggplant, and then you can make a dip with it. So in the bottom corner, this is baba ganoush, which is an eggplant dip that's used in a lot of Middle Eastern, eat it with pita, or you could spread it on a sandwich, or you could put it in wraps, similar to how you'd eat hummus. So often I'll make this and I'll make hummus, and then that's nice protein and a good... And there's really not much other than the eggplant. A little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of cumin if you want, a little bit of tahini, again, if you want, and always olive oil. Everything I put almost olive oil in. So those are my thoughts on eggplant. Anybody else want to jump in on eggplant ideas?
it's a part of a typical ratatouille recipe that I've already put in there. So that's one of the ingredients.
Excellent.
It just reminded me of a dish I used to make. It was a grilled eggplant parm. So it's like your roll down here.
Yeah.
It was, I'm going to have to break that out again.
That's good.
So it was like grilled, and then you stuff it with a ricotta and tomatoes.
Yeah.
And then grill it again. Super yummy.
Yeah, definitely healthier than fried.
And try not to be afraid of it. It's... Karen has presented really easy ways to cook it. You don't need the salt. As Karen said, the oil helps reduce that bitter flavor, just like the oil breaks down the kale for us. Try it. You might like it.
Excellent. Root vegetables.
Okay. So, definitely not necessarily root vegetable season, but this is you can definitely find lots of root vegetables grown locally. So our farmers market, when they're in season, they have a lot of these. These are also things that we can easily grow, and they do keep well. So one of the things that I really like about root vegetables is that they can be sweet. So when you cook them in certain ways, you get a really sweet flavor from them. And as Cynthia mentioned earlier, you can eat the tops of most greens or most root vegetables. So I actually picked a carrot, very much like these little white ones here today. And I just chopped the greens up and put it in my salad. But it does make really good pesto and things like that. So you can use most of the parts of the root vegetables. So some of my favorite ways to eat them, roasted. I mean, this really classic root vegetable preparation. So on the resource page, one of the things I put in there was a toaster oven roasted vegetable. So that it's nice and easy for home. And if it's a little warm, you don't necessarily heat up your whole kitchen with the stove. And then, yeah, just high heat and roasting with a little bit of olive oil, and then whatever seasonings you want. Carrots are really great. I grew up eating a maple syrup carrots. My mom used to make all the time. She would boil them and almost like reduce like a maple syrup. So I put in the resources, a honey mustard carrots, which is kind of that same thing. So they're a simmered carrot in like a honey mustard sauce. And then one thing that you can always do with root vegetables, especially sweet potatoes, is mix them with other things. So in my house, sweet potatoes are a go-to meal. Anyway, a stuffed sweet potato is a great dinner. You can put pretty much anything on it and call it dinner. But you can mix sweet potatoes with like black beans and things like that and make really great burgers. So I put that in there as well. So there's really no end to what you can do. And then of course, you can eat like carrots and beets. You can eat those raw. So I know a lot of us are familiar with like shredded carrot salads. You can do the same with beets, or you can cut them up and serve them with the baba ganoush from the eggplant. So very, very versatile.
Excellent. Thanks, Elizabeth. I said I really love roasted vegetables, and that's my that's usually my main course for a big Thanksgiving. Is I roast a big pan of root vegetables with olive oil, thyme, a little bit of pepper, salt, and then I like the sauces. I also like mashed, particularly parsnips. But they make a really nice, and turnips too, they make a nice mash, and you can do them half and half with potatoes, but even just mash them by themselves, and they're It's something people often like that they don't think they'll like. So they'll eat it and say, oh, is that mashed potatoes?
It has a really good flavor. Both parsnips and turnips both have a delicious flavor when they're mashed. It's more mild than I think people would think.
Yeah. Anything else on root vegetables before we go on?
So we have a young turnips as coleslaw. That's interesting.
Yeah, I include it with the cabbage and onion and little carrot. Yeah, but they're mild, right? So
yeah, I love that.
Nice. Let's talk about winter squash.
Oh, winter squash. It's always hard for me. I mean, bell peppers are my first choice of vegetable, but all the rest I love. I love them. Grew up on acorn squash, which is that one, the green one on the bottom with a little bit of yellow. If you're buying it, don't buy it with that little bit of yellow. That little bit of yellow means that it's starting to get a little old. So you want it more green so that you get the nice texture and the sweet flavor from it. That little bit of yellow probably isn't a problem, but any more than that, probably not your favorite choice after that. I grew up on acorn squash. It was probably the favorite meal in the household of all the family members. And Arizona really opened me up to a lot of different things. I'd never had butternut squash before I moved here. And I absolutely love it. Spaghetti squash, I'd heard about. Spaghetti squash is a great, you bake that, take all the stuff out, and then you use it in place of spaghetti. For pastas, you put any kind of your favorite pasta sauce on there that you like. The one up in the top is a Hubbard squash, the green one up in top. Very sweet, delicious. Are some of these natives? The squash, the one at the very bottom, I'm sorry, is the Hubbard. The top one is the buttercup squash. The one at the bottom is the Hubbard squash. Could be native here. They're huge. And they're actually what you find in canned pumpkin. Canned pumpkin is not actually pumpkin, it's the Hubbard squash. They're very sweet and delicious, and they are grown around here now. All of them are versatile. You can use them in all sorts of things. You can bake them in the oven. You can peel them and cut them up into chunks and add them to a soup or a stew. You can use them in place of sweet potatoes. You can microwave them to cook them in the microwave. If you don't cut them in half to cook them in the microwave, poke a few holes in them so they don't blow up in your microwave. But easy to cook. They store for a really long time. They can store, if you have the right place in your house, 3 to 6 months, and they will still be good. The seeds you can eat just like you do pumpkin seeds. We don't tend to because we assume that, we don't eat those, but we can eat some pumpkin seeds, but you get the same nutrients and fiber from those pumpkin seeds. You can use them, the cooked version of these, in place of, well, most of them. I think spaghetti squash might be a little different, but the others you can use in place of fats in quick bread. So throw some butternut squash in, cooked butternut squash, in the quick bread instead of oil or butter. And it's going to make it sweet and tasty, and it's going to give you a nice moisture. And you can reduce some of the sugar you add to those quick breads because you've got the sugar in these squash. I love, my mom would cut the acorn squash in half, take the seeds out, and just bake it in the oven with a little butter in it. And love it. And then people introduced putting a little cinnamon on top. So you can have it as a dessert. Easy to cook, easy to store, versatile. You can add them to all sorts of things. If you ever get one of those big Hubbard squashes, ooh, they're a lot of fun and so delicious.
I think excellent. The best thing about the winter squashes is that they really don't, they're good just like they are. I mean, you can do a lot of things with them, but they're good just like they are.
I would say before I tried some different things with them, I was not a huge fan of winter squash. But once I started, butternut to me is one I really like. And then once I learned some cooking things with butternut, I kind of realized, you, like Cynthia said, you can use a lot of these squash in the same way. So one of my favorite things is a butternut squash filling that I make, where you roast the butternut. So cut it in half, bake it at high heat until kind of like the eggplant, till it's brown and soft. And then mix it with a little bit of Parmesan cheese, some garlic, some olive oil. And then you can use it. You can put breadcrumbs in it if you want. It's optional. And then you can use it as a stuffing either in lasagna. So I make a lasagna that's white. It's a white sauce and then it has layers of butternut. In fact, somebody just asked me, they said they were asked to make a vegan lasagna for an event. And she said, I'm really not willing to take something that's not, it's not edible. What can I do? And I said, oh, make a vegetable filling. And it could be the butternut or could be some of the other things we've talked about. But then just make a bechamel sauce with soy milk, completely vegan. You can use nutritional yeast instead of the cheese. And it's really, really good. But that same butternut squash, you can add chopped pecans to it and stuff pasta shells, or even put it on a pizza.
All of those things, all of them. One of my favorite things that I was introduced to moving to Arizona 30 plus years ago was the Mexican pastries, the turnovers with them stuffed with pumpkin.
Yeah.
And in fact, they don't use pumpkin. They use Hubbard or butternut squash or the one of the others. And how delicious. Ooh, butternut risotto.
Yeah. Lots of good ideas for squash here.
Yeah, we could talk about that.
We could talk about all of these foods for hours.
Okay. Butternut squash and sage on pizza.
Yes, definitely. And speaking of sage, next up is herbs.
Nice. We didn't even pay her to do that. For that lead in. Herbs. Herbs are the leafy part of the plant, and the seeds are what we call spices. And for a lot of these, we can use the seeds and the leaves, depending on what they are. They can easily be grown on windowsills so that you can have smaller amounts and you just trim as much as you need so that you're keeping that plant small. So it doesn't overtake them, but it's a mint and it can take over everything. So little smaller containers are great. Trying to grow dill in the desert, very difficult because it gets so hot. So that's one that you really do want to try and grow inside. These foods can be used to enhance the flavors of the other foods that you're eating. Not a huge amount of nutrients in these, unless you're eating large handfuls of these herbs, but you're adding flavor and texture and color to the other foods you're eating. So it makes those foods more exciting to eat. When you're using herbs, whether they're fresh or they're dry, warm them in the pan first to release the flavor oils. And that's before you even put any oil in the pan or anything. Break it up, rub it in your hands, get a mortar and pestle, something like that. Break it up and put it in your pan and let that warm up first. And you're going to need to use far less of the herb and get far more flavor from it. And you can even take the herbs out after you've heated them and then put the oil in and do everything else that you're going to do with that pan. And then put the herbs back in at the very end of that cooking process. So I'm thinking about sauteing vegetables and maybe a stir fry, things like that. We can also make all kinds of different pestos. you can make the traditional pesto with the basil and pine nuts, but for one small package, what, 1/2 ounce of, I think it's 1/4 cup of pine nuts, costs about $8. It's a lot of money for these things. So be creative and enjoy yourself and look for other ways to make this pesto. Can you use almonds? Absolutely. Maybe you want a sweeter pesto and you want to use pecans. Try that. There are many, many different pesto recipes out there. So play with those. Oh, pistachios. Oh my gosh, I love pistachios. That could be an extremely tasty pesto. Pistachios with maybe basil might be a little strong flavor with pistachios. So maybe you want to use Italian parsley with those pistachios. So you really get the flavor of the pistachios, but you still have that lovely texture with the parsley. So again, play with it. Don't be afraid to try new things. Yeah, it might cost you a little bit up front, but once you get that first recipe down that you really love, then that's your thing. That's your own invention that you can say, I did this. And more often than not, things work out really well. My favorite thing with cookbooks is to read the cookbook and go, I wonder if I added this instead of this, if that would do this. But I have lots of years under my belt doing that. So take the recipe, try the recipe the first time, and taste it and see, I wonder if I tried it this way next time, if it would be a different thing and if I would like it better. And have your family play with it too. Have your family sit down and maybe have tastings. Okay, I did this with this one, this with this one, this with this one. Which one do you like best? Or don't tell them what's in there and ask them to vote. And then you talk about what is your favorite one with this herb mixture? What is your favorite one with this pesto mixture? When you have your own herbs and you're growing them, and maybe you do grow huge herb plants, which is great. You can dry them on your own. Find a nice, safe place to dry them. Hang them upside down. They will dry. And then you can break them into smaller pieces and store them. Make your own herb mixtures. Why spend the money at the grocery store for those herb mixtures if you're growing them on your own? Or if your family and friends are growing all of these, try playing with that and making your own Italian herb mixture. When you have a lot of herbs that you have grown and you're not sure what to do with them, you can cut them into smaller pieces, maybe put them in a little oil, saute them just a little bit, and then get ice trays, pour a little olive oil in each ice tray, put those herbs in those ice trays, and you have a ready-made flavoring for whatever you're making. You pop out one of those little ice cubes with the herbs and the oil, put it in the pan. Those herbs are heating up while the oil melts. Delicious ways to add flavor to the food you're cooking. Yeah, see, Elizabeth, yes, yeah, she's my hero. She's my hero. She might have been the one who taught me that. Also consider adding some of these herbs right to salads. There's no reason why you couldn't chop up a little basil into a salad and add that flavor. Lemon balm is a wonderful herb. Put it in some water just to flavor your water. Lemon balm is also great in a salad and a stir fry. Again, that lemon flavor can enhance the rest of the flavors in your food. When you're making those quick breads, especially like Elizabeth was talking about the zucchini pancakes. Did I hear that right?
I was thinking like zucchini bread French toast.
Oh, right. Zucchini bread French toast. Maybe add a little lemon balm to that zucchini bread. And then drizzle some kind of lemon sauce over that French toast. A syrup. So many ways we can use these herbs. And peppermint grows so well here. It's really hard for peppermint not to grow here. And what lovely things can you do with peppermint? As simple as adding it to water to flavor that water, because, you know, it's hard to drink water sometimes. Water gets a little sad. So when we can add that flavor, we add that flavor right to the water, let it sit for a little bit, and you might be more interested in drinking more water. And you're using these wonderful herbs that maybe you've grown, your neighbor's grown, maybe you bought it at the farmer's market.
Cynthia, for people who haven't done it before, can you just give like the 30-second how to make pesto in a generic way with any kind of greens and nuts?
Well, sure. So you get whatever greens you're going to use, a little bit of oil, whatever your favorite oil is. I mean, most people are going to say olive oil, and you might want the extra virgin olive oil for that extra flavor that it gives. But I personally like avocado oil for that same reason. It's a little thicker. It gets a great flavor. You blend that in whatever blender you have. If you don't have a Vitamix, that's okay. It's all right to use whatever blender you have. You can use a food processor if that's what you prefer. A little bit of oil, maybe a little bit of lemon juice, lime juice, depending on what you want to do. You might want to change it up and maybe add a little grapefruit juice to it or orange juice, and then add the nuts. And you want everything in there to be pretty chopped up and smooth, because you're going to use it as a spread. Or you can toss it on cooked pasta and mix it in for flavor. So you don't want big chunks, although that's okay too. If that's how you choose to have your pesto, traditionally it's a very, very fine paste almost. And absolutely, Karen says pesto freezes well. Yes, it does. Since I'm allergic to dairy, I don't add cheese to my pesto of any kind. So for that cheesy Parmesan flavor, you might want to add just a touch of salt, or try a little white wine vinegar for that flavor rather than the Parmesan cheese or the Romano cheese. Nutritional yeast can also add that cheesy flavor. Absolutely. Absolutely. Canola oil. Right? In any of the oils that you really like. Olive oil is the go-to oil, but they all have basically the same nutritional value to them. So they're not going to raise your cholesterol. It might help lower cholesterol. Some of the other, if you're talking about heating foods, olive oil has a very low smoke point. So you don't want it to, it's got to be for very low cooking. But if you're making pesto, you're probably not going to heat that pesto up. The warmest it's going to get is because you put it on warm pasta. Did I cover that pretty well?
I think that's great. Let's jump to Elizabeth and fruits.
Awesome. So fruits. I was shocked when I moved to Arizona to learn that fruits grow fairly well here. So figs and pomegranates. You probably know a neighbor that has a fig tree or a pomegranate tree. They're kind of everywhere here. And I happen to really like figs. So I'm happy about that. But also plums grow well, apricots, apples, Asian pears. You can find all of those here. I don't know if I said peaches, but definitely peaches and melons even you can find during the summer at the farmer's market. So there is a wide range of local fruit. So fruit is good as it is, right? Like it's delicious just as a snack, as a, you know, just a piece of fruit. But I really like to make savory fruit dishes. and one of those is like a fruit salsa. So I put cantaloupe salsa in the resource page, but I mean, you can make a fruit salsa with anything. So, going back to the herbs, like cantaloupe, mint, jalapeno, a little bit of onion and some acid makes a fantastic fruit salsa that you can put on anything. You can put it on the zucchini tacos from earlier and really make it super summery. You can make a winter salsa. So like, especially a tart apple, like a Granny Smith mixed with a little bit of onion and chipotle, and then like apple cider vinegar and some cilantro. Then, you know, it's a great winter salsa you can make with fruit. Then soups. So the winter squashes and apples pair awesome together for soup. I love to make butternut squash and apple soup. You can also do that with pears. And so those are really good. I put a recipe for that in. I put sweet potato and apple soup in the thing, but any type of vegetable like that you can mix. And one of our favorites here in our house, it's a frequent weekend request, are apple pancakes. So just making a very traditional buttermilk pancake and adding a little bit of fresh apple in there is really, really good as well. And then, you know, just a little bit of butter on those is just perfect. So apple broccoli salad, those are fantastic. So apple, broccoli, sometimes some raisins, a little bit of yogurt. You get a nice, like, healthy salad. So there's lots and lots of choices. And then one thing I would be remiss if I did not mention is grilled peaches. If you have not tried grilled peaches, you have to try them. It is one of the best things in the summer. They're so good. It lends such a great flavor to the peaches, which are already amazing anyway. And I put a roasted stone fruit and ice cream recipe in because that's a joy. And then if you had some balsamic reduction left from your eggplant, like that would be a good place to use it as well. Kind of make that all one thing. Fruits are one of my favorites, especially when we're talking about feeding kids, because you can really get really versatile with that.
Very nice. Thank you. So we're going to wrap up with some things you can do with almost any vegetable. And the first one that I want to talk about is just jumping right off on fruits, which is an apple sage pizza. So I love pizza. Pizza is the one thing that we eat a lot of in our house. And there's so many things you can do with fruits and vegetables with pizza. So this apple sage pizza is just cut up apples. And again, I leave the skin on, saute them with a little bit of sage. And then I don't use any sauce on this pizza. Sometimes I'll use either a little bit of garlic, like a garlic cream, or just olive oil. And then I do it with cheddar cheese. Again, you could use nutritional yeast or something else. But that's the thing I make when people come over and they're like, wow, that's so different. Really good. This next pizza is asparagus and mushrooms. I think that was just from a week ago, because that's what we have in season right now. We didn't have time to do a whole thing on mushrooms, but we have amazing mushroom vendors in our county. And one to really look for is Trumpet Mushrooms and Savon, who sells at both Sierra Vista and Bisbee. They are these beautiful mushrooms. If you haven't had them, they have a big stem and a little cap. And it's really the stem that you eat. You cut it long ways and it tastes like scallops. They are so delicious. So find Savon and ask about the Trumpet Mushrooms. But don't buy them all before the day I get there, because this is my one thing I have to have at the farmer's market. And then also the All Red family has all kinds of new mushrooms that are just wonderful. And then underneath that, this is just a pizza with a, I think that's a goat cheese base. And then again, the grilled eggplant and grilled zucchini and summer squash. And this is probably one I pulled out of the freezer, because I do, when we have that, all those eggplant and all those zucchini, I grill up tons of them, and then I just make little Ziploc bags, and then it's just so easy to pull them out and just put them on pasta or pizza or whatever. And there's a recipe that we'll put in the chat for pizza that's just a very generic sort of recipe, but it also has a recipe that I like for pizza crust that's pretty easy to make. I told you I live in a really rural part of the country or county. There's no pizza delivery here. So making pizza crust is something. And again, you can freeze it. So make a bunch of them and then you just pop it out and it's super fast. We've talked some about pasta, and lasagnas are a great way to get a lot of vegetables in. Enchiladas, the filling that you would normally do, maybe meat, think about all these vegetables. Cubed up summer squash is my kind of go-to with onions. I use a lot of onions in my cooking. But really almost any kind of vegetable you can put in an enchilada. Tostadas are another really quick thing. That's what's waiting for me to assemble when I get home. And you can put beans or no beans, avocado, but then just a kind of a salad with whatever you have around, chopped up vegetables, and then the normal salsa. You can do a lot of variety with tostadas. In the bottom right-hand corner of this picture, that is a frittata with chard, and I'm sure onions and garlic, because that's what I always put in everything. And if you haven't made a frittata, it's similar to an omelet. So I usually just saute the vegetables. So I would saute the chard, or you could use any kind of greens, onions and garlic. I usually start with onions and garlic because they take a little bit longer to cook, then add the greens until they wilt, and then just take a mixture of eggs and a little bit of milk. Potatoes are great and traditional in a frittata, but you can make it with whatever you want. And then put the eggs in, put a cover on it, and then you can either flip it with a plate so you can cook the other side, or if you're using an oven-proof fry pan, just stick it under the broiler to finish the top. And I'm going to, instead of reading through these, I'm going to just skip to some pictures. So one thing I love to do, again, with a variety of vegetables is what we just called, we call them warm winter salads at my house. And I don't know why, because we don't only eat them in the winter. But it's basically a normal kind of lettuce on the bottom, like a normal salad that's dressed with vinegar and oil or whatever. And then some kind of grains. So it could be couscous, it could be bulgur wheat, it could be tabbouleh, whatever kinds of grain thing you want, mixed with probably some parsley or whatever herbs you have around. Dried fruit is great in this. Nuts are great in this. And then this one, we just have different, these are pears and cucumbers around the outside, but just kind of whatever you have around. And that's a nice way to mix it up. This is another one. Now this one doesn't have the salad base, but it's, I think it's quinoa with roasted vegetables in a sauce. So again, just that roast of mixed vegetables with something over it. I love grilled vegetables, and particularly I love sauces. So sauces are a nice way to sort of dress up your grilled vegetables, whether it's a pesto or a garlic mayonnaise or a romesco or salsa. I mean, there's just so many great sauces you can make with these things. And that's a nice way to dress up vegetables for people who may think they're not enthusiastic about vegetables. Everything's better with sauces, in my opinion. In the middle, these are roasted turnips, and these are roasted with a miso sauce. And this was another one from Jose Andres's last book that just came out. So it's just a miso whisked with a little bit of water, and I think he puts a little bit of sugar in it, but I would say that's optional. And then again, roasted at high heat, 425, 450. If they're cut thin, it doesn't take too long to cook, but get them good and brown. You can see how these have that crunchy brown. It really, that caramelization is really nice. This is an eggplant dish that is slices of eggplant, and then there's a filling inside of it. So you cut the eggplant thin and sort of lay it out in the pan, fanning over the edge, fill it up, and then flip the eggplant over to kind of encase the filling. And I believe this was a ricotta filling, but you could do any kind of vegetable filling or whatever. Brush it with olive oil and then bake the whole thing. And I think there's a recipe for that on our resource page. These are those trumpet mushrooms in the bottom middle here. So that's what the, you can see they look like scallops. And with asparagus, and that's on risotto. So this is a traditional risotto with rice, but I also just got a recipe for making risotto with orzo, which I think I'm going to try soon. So that's more of a pasta instead of rice, but it's made in a similar way. And risotto is something that I think it sounds fussy, and you read the recipe and it says, you know, you have to stir it constantly for 40 minutes. I think it's not as hard as it sounds like in the recipes. You don't really have to stir it constantly. You do have to add liquid gradually, but it's really delicious and something I would encourage you to try. And then the final picture here in the bottom right-hand corner is that would be the filling for the soft tacos that I mentioned. So this is something I make a lot because it's really easy. So it's zucchini, onions, maybe some yellow squash, and just either grilled or pan fried, and then use it in the soft tortillas like you make whatever kind of soft tacos. So that's just kind of a quick tour of some things that you can make with really a lot of vegetables. And again, I think we've all said, experiment, try different things. Don't feel like you have to be totally bound to the recipe. We are right at 7 o'clock. So I'm going to just again, say the website, eatlocalcochise.org/delicious. After this webinar is over, in the next couple days, we'll send a recording of this as well as a link to those resources again. I do want to mention that our libraries have some pretty amazing collections of books. I mentioned the Jose Andres is the one I'm just in love with right now. I'm like cooking my way through it. It's called Vegetables Unleashed. Mark Bittman's How to Cook Everything Vegetarian is another good basic one that just, it's a big thick book, but he takes a vegetable and he says, here's, you know, 10 different ways to make it. And then this Farm Fresh Flavors is a new one to me that I think all of our branches now have a copy of. And it's very approachable recipes that you can make without having a lot of other ingredients on hand. So it's a good, kind of a good beginner one. And I know everybody's fans of Deborah Madison. She has a number of good cookbooks. And then the other resource that our libraries have now are electronic versions of magazines, and not just cooking, but all kinds of magazines. If you go to cochiselibrary.org and then click the e-resources. So it's where ebooks are, but there are also now tons of magazines and that you can just read on your laptop or on your tablet. And I'm a big fan of cooking magazines because it gets me to try different things. And I like a lot of variety. And a lot of times I just get stuck, you know, we all get stuck in the rut of the things we make all the time, but cooking magazines are kind of a nice way to see what are some other things. And these are all actually magazines that our library has monthly subscriptions that you can get electronically. So Bon Appetit is a great sort of standard, but there's also several vegan and plant-based specific magazines that I think are great resources. Upcoming events in 2 weeks, Cynthia will be joining us again along with BJ Searcy to talk about preserving food, a variety of canning, but also freezing and drying. 2 weeks after that, we'll be talking about foraging. On June 16th, we have a session on raising local livestock and the benefits of local meat. And then, like I said, in June, we'll be doing our big read and we'll have an online book discussion for that. So if you have questions, please feel free to email us or find us on Facebook and Instagram. Facebook particularly, we post a lot of recipes and ideas. Instagram has a lot of these great pictures of food. So again, more inspiration. I love to photograph my food. So I think that concludes it. I don't know, Elizabeth or Cynthia, if you have any closing thoughts you want to share.
Go try something new. Thank you for having us.
Enjoy have fun, experiment. Thanks for letting us be here.
Definitely. Thank you all, and we look forward to seeing you on a future session.